Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, April 22nd, 2012. This is episode 868. Enjoy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk tech. Computers and the internet, of course, but, you know, nowadays it's mostly cell phones. There's some home theater mixed in there. Definitely digital photography. What else? Kind of those are the big ones. Cameras, cell phones, computers, the internet, home theater, and headphones. Yeah, headphones. That's it too. No, that's pretty analog actually. I don't think there are any digital headphones because your ears are analog. You know, you hear probably a lot digital analog. What does that mean, digital analog? That's probably a little confusing. The real world that we live in is obviously analog. And a computer doesn't have a very easy time looking at analog stuff. It's too fuzzy. It's too vague. It's too human. So what a computer does, because a computer is very mechanical, it's really a bunch of very, 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 very fast on-off switches. A little storage. And that's about it. It's pretty simple stuff, but it does stuff so fast that it looks like it's thinking, but it's not. It's just on-off switches, moving stuff around. It can do addition and subtraction, but really all addition, you know, is kind of more on-off switches. Subtraction, same thing. In fact, there's a kid, a smart kid, I think 15 or 16-year-old, who built a calculator out of bits in Minecraft, a purely analog calculator, like kind of like the difference machine that Charles Babbage invented in the 18th century. It's mechanical. Maybe if you're old enough, I remember them. You remember the mechanical calculators, pre-digital? They were just cogs and wheels and stuff. So you can do addition and subtraction just by mechanical stuff. And if you have on-off switches, you could do it kind of the same way, but just faster. And moving stuff around is fast because it's the speed of light practically. That's a computer. That's it. That's the problem is that the world you live in, you and I live in, is waves. It's vibrations. It's smooth, not on and off. It's continuous. The sound of my voice, for instance, as you hear it, really is just waves being formed via air pressure in the air between you and me. If there were no air, you wouldn't be able to hear me. And it comes to your ear, and your ear senses the changes in air pressure. It turns that into sound. Well, your brain's very good at that. But a computer doesn't understand that. Air pressure? What is air, says a computer, sort of. More like it says 10101000111100110. It doesn't know. It doesn't know from sound pressure and waves. Light, same thing. It's waves. In fact, everything is waves or vibrations of some kind. All of life is vibrations and waves. Computers just on-off switches. So the process of going from analog, the real world, to the computer world is called digitization. Digitization, turning continuous waveforms into digits. It makes sense, doesn't it? Into digits, ones and zeros. So when you take my voice or music, which is these waves, you can actually, if you looked at them on an oscilloscope or a computer, or you'd see kind of looks like ocean waves. That's why they call them waves, because you get these waves. That's the sound of my voice. And there's some waves that are very high frequency. That's and some waves are very low frequency. And there's waves in the middle, and there's overtones, and they're all mixed together and mushed together into this thing that becomes a violin. Or a flute. When a computer makes a wave, an analog wave, it's very smooth. It's just a tone. because there's no overtones. So that's sound. That's the sound that's going through the air to you. But how does a computer understand that? It slices it up into little tiny slices. It's like a, think of the sound of my voice as a baloney coming straight at you. Okay, it's not the perfect analogy, but think of it as a baloney, big sausage coming straight at you. The computer doesn't know from sausage. So what it does is it slices it very thinly and measures its amplitude at each slice. How fast does it slice it? Well, if it's a CD, if it's CD quality audio, it slices it 44,100 times a second. 44,000, and it can even do faster. That's 44.1 kilohertz, 44,100 times a second. And then each time it takes a slice of that bologna, it's like a very fast deli machine. Each time it takes a slice of the bologna, it looks at its amplitude. It measures it. And it can measure it. The more refined the measurement, the more accurate, of course. If you only had, you know, five measurements, it would be kind of zero to five, it'd be very inaccurate. So if it used 8 bits, it would have 256 different positions, but it doesn't use 8 bits. It uses 16 bits of measurement. It's 2 bytes, 16 bits. So it has quite a few. What is that? Is that 4 million choices? So each slice of the bologna we then measure from 0 to 4 million. Now, is only 65,000? Okay, it's only 65,000. That's right. That's right. 32 bits would be 4 million. So 16 bits is only 65,536 choices. So it looks at that slice of bologna and it says that is somewhere between 1 and 65,536. And then that slice is gone. And then there's another one. 44,100 slices a second. And each of these is a measurement that a computer can understand. It's just numbers now. But when you put those slices of bologna together, you get the whole sausage. And that's what a computer's doing. In fact, when it's making music, playing back a CD, which is pure digital, it's 44,000 slices of bologna a second, measured from 0 to 65,000. But when it reassembles that and sends it to a speaker, it turns back into waves, into music, or my voice. It's kind of magical. In fact, that's what's happening to my voice. It's going, the sound pressure waves are coming from my mouth into the microphone that's sitting right in front of me. And it's electrical, converted though down the road, down those electrical pathways, those analog pathways, converted into bits. Then those bits are transmitted down to the control system, they call it a network operation center, where it's sent up to a satellite, all as bits. The satellite sends it down to your station, which decodes those bits, puts it out on a transmitter. And by the time it's at the transmitter, it's analog now, and your radio is receiving those analog waves and turning them into sound. And somewhere there's unicorn tears and pixie dust. And it's amazing how it works. So I realize all the time we talk about digital technology. What is that? It's ones and zeros. It's on and off. Because that's all a computer understands. But amazingly, because the computer is so fast, it simulates reality. It looks real. It sounds real. It feels real because it could do it so quickly. It looks like it's thinking. It looks like it's solving problems and puzzles. It looks like it's making music or even pictures. When you go to YouTube, those videos on YouTube are stored as ones and zeros, lots of ones and zeros, and then reconstructed by the computer to display on the screen. The screen is a series of little dots. They're still digital, on and off. Those little dots, maybe a little bit of color information. But by the time it gets to your eyes, it's waveforms from the screen to your eyes, and that's analog. So it's kind of an amazing thing when you think about it. First computers were pretty slow, couldn't do much. Then they got faster and faster. That's why we talk so much about the speed of a computer. We say, well, that's a 3 gigahertz processor. Your phone, many phones now have one or more gigahertz processors. Sometimes they have 2 gigahertz processors. The newest phones, the HTC One that T-Mobile just announced this week, has 2 1.5 gigahertz processors. That's a lot of ones and zeros being pushed. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. Let's talk tech. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's all digital from here on in.
Hey, Techie. technician will be with you in 4 hours.
4 hours?
You can upgrade for just $5,000.
What?
The universal serial config board should be sent to IDC.
Patrick Norton. Snoring in the background. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Actually, this comes from an anecdote about the TV show I used to do called Call for Help. I tried to do the same discussion we did with bologna a minute ago on TV with cheese and a slicer. But it's hard to slice cheese. And it was taking a long time. And my TV co-host at the time, Patrick Norton, fell asleep literally in the back of the studio. And that's the story. 8888. True story. I wouldn't kid you. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. I actually own 8888askleo.com, but I've never done anything with it. I should probably do something with it. If you go, our website is techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. And there you will find the phone number, the chat room. We've got a wonderful bunch of people in chat, always saying fun things like, shut up, Leo, or I'm hungry. If you want to join that group, actually, they're usually, they're often very helpful with answers to questions and so forth. They're kind of the extra help in the chat room. 8888-ASK. Leo's the phone number. TechGuyLabs.com is the website. And we go to our first call of the day from Rancho Cucamonga. David is on the line. Hi, David. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. This is David. I called to talk to you a couple of weeks ago about Pinterest, if you remember that call.
Yeah. Did you decide to put your stuff on Pinterest?
I got the account set up. I haven't had time to start downloading pictures and everything, but I had a different question regarding my Magic Jack.
Okay, Magic Jack is a VoIP solution, voice using your internet access to save on phone calls.
Yeah, I mean, and it works great when I plug the phone directly into the Magic Jack, but when I set it up in my office, I plugged it into my phone lines, and when I leased the office, I had to run new phone lines, so they're all clean lines, but it's about 200 feet of line, and when I plug the Magic Jack into the line, now I could barely hear the calls, and they could barely hear me. So I looked online, and online they said, oh, well, you should get a USB hub to add more power to the Magic Jack device, which I did, but I still get the same effect.
Boy, you got me. This is using a Magic Jack without a computer or with a computer?
Using with a computer. I'm using it with a computer.
So the audio is coming from the computer, not the Magic Jack?
No, it's the internet's coming via the computer to the Magic Jack.
And then
device.
The Magic Jack plugs into the USB port of the computer.
Right.
Which should be sufficient. A USB hub's not going to make any difference there. And then you've got a phone line coming out of it.
Right. And I plug that in.
Now, if you put a short, just out of curiosity, if you put a short cord in there and listen, is it all right?
Yeah. When I just plug a phone directly in there, it's fine. It's just when I go to put it on my office system, which has more wire, let's say.
Right.
I'm getting like a voltage drop, and I'm not.
Yeah, it's attenuating. So this actually ties into this analog-digital thing. Analog signals, which is what's going down that Cat 3 cable, that RJ 15 cable, is analog and loses juice the longer you go. You said 200 feet?
Yeah, it's about 200 feet of line.
That's a long way.
Well, it's going to the junction box, and then box, and then it's coming back to another office. So essentially it's like running through the office.
Yeah, I think that's too long. So let me ask the chat room, there must be a kind of a way to boost a phone signal on a line, or should he use better cable maybe? Use a higher quality cable than the little thin cable. Ah, here's a good choice. I like this. The Sioux. I met the Sioux at NAB this week. It was fun to see you, the Sioux. In our chat room says, what about a cordless phone? That's a good idea. Plug the base station into the Magic Jack. It's right there. And now the cordless phone will send it all over the place. The other thing you could do is try to replace the wire, but I bet you can't because, of course, it's probably in the wall, a lot of it. And there may be such a thing as a phone line booster. That's beyond me. I don't know. But I think cordless really is the solution that I would use. If the cable is in the wall, you're not going to be able to replace it. If you could, replace it with a cable that is not going to attenuate so much. Maybe Cat 5 instead of Cat 3. Thicker cable instead of thinner cable. And then I guess if it's in the wall, you know, you're kind of out of luck unless you could find a booster. And I don't know what that would require. 8888, ask Leo. If you know, I would love to know. Cat 5 is twisted. It's copper, so you could use that. But is it not going to solve? It's not. I don't know. It's beyond me, David. But there's. I understand why it's not working. Let's put it that way. I'm not surprised. It's not supposed to go that far. That's awfully long. It just never was designed to do that. Sam in Simi Valley, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Sam.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
Going very well. How are you?
I'm good. Can you hear me all right?
I sure can.
Okay, Leo, I have a question for you.
Yes.
I'm an IT guy, and one of my clients had a Wi-Fi issue.
Yeah.
And I was in the house where I was installing his Apple Internet Wi-Fi box, the Airport Express.
Yep.
And I was wondering, why is he getting interference in the lower room, and in the upper room he gets a strong signal?
Well, that's the problem with Wi-Fi in general. Wi-Fi is radio transmissions, right? Now, one of the things about Wi-Fi, it's at very high frequencies, 2.4 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz. Those are microwave frequencies. Here, we'll do a little more talking about analog. Could I explain analog digital today? Analog, which those waves are, the higher the frequency, the closer the wave peaks are together, the more likely to bounce off stuff. When you get really high frequency, which is 2.4 gigahertz, 2.4 billion waves per second, it bounces off almost anything, particularly metal. So it's very easy to block Wi-Fi signals by putting a metal mesh in the wall. Now, maybe your building has metal in the walls, or I'm in a steel building, and I can't get radio reception in there. It's what we call a Faraday cage. It's effectively radio suppression because it's got metal in the walls. It's got metal screens. And so that's what's going on. Wi-Fi likes to be, nobody tells you this when you get Wi-Fi, it likes to be line of sight. Works best because it's microwave. If you can see the airport from your computer, that's good. Anything in between is going to reduce the signal, and if it's metal in between, you may kill it entirely. You should also check around to see what other stuff is going on at 2.4 gigahertz. This is another very common problem because Wi-Fi now is everywhere. Do you have more than a couple of Wi-Fi access points visible when you choose Wi-Fi? I have, here we have like 11 or 12. There are only really three channels on Wi-Fi. I know it goes from 0 to 11, but really because Wi-Fi kind of is spread spectrum, it occupies a few of those channels, one in the center and one on either side. So you really effectively, you only have three channels. If there's a lot of Wi-Fi traffic, it could be causing trouble. You might try 5 gigahertz. That's usually less crowded. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Every newspaper in the country now has picked up this story, which I hadn't frankly heard much about since September or October. The FBI is warning people that on July 9th, your computer could go down because since September, they've been faking the DNS. Oh, man. All right. So let's go back in time a little bit. There is this is Operation Ghost Click. In November of last year, the FBI, in conjunction with Estonian National Police, arrested 6 Estonians who are running a very sophisticated internet fraud ring out of Estonia. They were putting out viruses. In fact, they'd been doing it since 2007. For 5 years, they had a virus called DNS Changer. And if you got infected, one of the things this thing did was change the network settings in your computer to point to a fake DNS server. DNS is the phone book on the internet, lets you look up websites. They were once they'd done that, they were able to change the ads on websites that you visit. They were able to direct you to spam websites. They could do all sorts of stuff. Since 2007, 4 million computers have been infected, about 500,000 of them in the United States. The FBI says that in those 5 years, they could manipulate internet advertising so well that it generated at least $14 million. That's a good deal. They made good money. And, of course, when you get the malware, it also prevented your antivirus software from updating and your operating system. So the FBI, when they busted these guys, they asked the internet, the ISC, to take those IP addresses they were using for their fake DNS server, the Internet Systems Consortium, and maintain temporary clean DNS servers at that address. It's not where you're supposed to go. But for some reason, the FBI, in their infinite wisdom, decided better to do this than to get these people to fix their computers, even though, as you just heard, it's very likely those computers had lots of other flaws on them. If your computer hasn't been updated in 5 years, I guarantee you, you're loaded with viruses. So what the FBI decided is, well, nobody's going to fix their computer, so we'll just fix it temporarily. But it costs money to maintain these servers, and they've decided that on July 9th, they're just going to turn them off. And so there are stories all over the news world. You've probably seen them by now, saying, for some people, for hundreds of thousands of people, the internet will stop working on July 9th. Well, that really misstates what's happened. What really is true is that hundreds of thousands of people are infected. Their computers have been infected, doing God knows what, never knowing it was infected because everything worked just fine, thanks to the FBI, managing to spread all sorts of other problems because they couldn't get updated. They probably, are loaded with malware. And now what they're telling people to do is, well, just, here's how you fix your DNS. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have this virus, your computer is a mess. Who knows what stuff's beasties and ghouls and goblins are lurking on there? Fixing the DNS is not going to fix the fact that you can't update your antivirus, that your antivirus is useless, that you can't update your operating system, which means it's holier than a pound of Swiss cheese. They've really fixed nothing, and these articles I see going out don't really give you the information you need. There is a, DNS changer working group, the DCWG.org. Find out if you have been violated. Oh, man. Find out if you have been violated and infected with DNS changer. The problem is, if you have, and you haven't been able to update your computer or your antivirus for months, maybe years, you're completely out of luck anyway. You should erase your hard drive and start over. I'm serious. Now, they have a manual how to fix this. They have an automatic how to fix it. None of this means a hill of beans. They're missing the point entirely, and so is the FBI, frankly. And it's kind of inappropriate that they did what they did. What we all need to do is, you need to find out if your computer has a virus of any kind, malware of any kind. There's lots of ways to do that. I'm going to tell you three right now. And if it does, then you need to fix it. And the only way really to fix it is not to fix your DNS entries, which is, by the way, they're recommending things like Hitman Pro and the Norton Power Eraser. No! No! You need to format your hard drive and reinstall Windows. It's the only thing that will work. Your system is so morbidly infected with beasts, there is nothing to do but back up your data and reinstall Windows. This is worthless advice. And the news that your internet's going to stop working in July, well, if your internet stops working in July, you got bigger problems than that. Seriously, you've got bigger problems than that. So here's the thing. You have on, well, Of course, this isn't going to work. I take it back. Microsoft every month updates something they call the malicious software removal tool, but you haven't been able to get Windows updates, have you, if you have this thing? Well, you could try it. Click Start in your Windows menu, Run, and type MRT. That's the Windows Malicious Software Removal Tool. Microsoft updates it every month. Do a thorough scan. It'll open a window you've never seen before. It actually is on your system, but there's no menu entry for it. I don't know why Microsoft's hiding it. Do a thorough scan. If it is up to date, you know, do update it if it's not. And if you can't update it, you probably have a problem. If you can update it and you can run it and it comes out clean, you're fine. There are lots of great places to run online antivirus scanners. Our sponsor, ESET, has a very good one, ESET.com. If you can't get to that site, you have the virus. But they have a free scanner. If you go to ESET.com and you look on the right-hand side there, you'll see online scanner. This is for Windows only. But you can run this scanner. If it says you're clean, good. The fact that you could get there is a good sign. Most viruses will prevent you from going to antivirus sites. There's another good one at antivirus.com. A-N-T-I-V-I-R-U-S. Antivirus.com. It's the Trend Micro site. And they have an online scanner there as well. I think it's... let's see if it's on the front page there. It doesn't look like it is, which is too bad. It would be in the... Maybe it's at the bottom. Free online scanning is what you want. Well, go to ESET. They have a link on their front page. If you run these scanners and everything's fine, there it is, house call. There it is, housecall.trendmicro.com. That's, you can download it or you can do it online. Good to download it if you can. You'll get a better result. It's free. Run those. If you come out clean, good news. If you don't worry about July 9th. You need to start over, my friend. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Now you know why I have studios in the wine country, Vance. Vance Willis is here from studiotech.tv, which is a great podcast about studios. And one of the neat things about radio now is you can pretty much do it anywhere. Actually, even TV. I thought for a long time, oh, I'm going to be stuck in major markets like LA and New York if I want to work in television. No. Now I have a TV studio in the middle of nowhere, in the wine country. And it's fun because people drop by with wine. Gene McDonald, who is at the great Smile Software, they make great Mac software, was up at the wine country, stopped by and dropped me a bottle of wine. Now, of course, I will not touch this wine till much later. Much, much later. But, you know, it used to be, and I think it still probably is an FCC rule that you're not supposed to have alcohol in the studio. Is that right? I think that's right. Yeah. So we'll just give that to John. He can drink it out there. 8888, Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And we're moving on to Marcos in Claremont, California. Hi, Marcos. Leo Laporte here.
Oh, hello, Leo. How are you?
I'm wonderful.
I listen to your show every weekend when I'm working.
Bless you.
I am in the process of writing a book, which will be out in June. I want to translate my book to Spanish. I want to see if you can help me to find a program that I can download or I can buy to translate it.
Well, I have to say, I don't think anything's going to do a perfect colloquial job. Sounds like you might speak Spanish yourself, right, Marcos?
Yes, I do.
So this would, you want kind of a starting point, but you're still going to have to. There's nothing that will do such a good job that you won't have to go through it and fix it.
So there's no program that I can download or...
I wish. But actually, that's a good thing for translators. No, there's no automatic translation that's perfect. There's quite a few good ones. My favorite is actually Google Translate. Translate.google.com. There are other programs, but none of them are perfect because it's a difficult thing. This is where a computer, the place computers have the biggest challenge are understanding people. And it's interesting because this is something that, you know, obviously computer scientists have thrown lots of energy and money at for as long as there have been computers. Automatic translation. Handwriting recognition, even dictation. And these are the big three challenges, frankly, because the way a computer works is so different from the human brain. It really, the human brain is not a big calculator. The computer is just a big calculator, as we talked about earlier this hour. The human brain is much more sophisticated. First of all, it's a lot slower, much slower than a computer. A computer operates nearly at the speed of light. We barely operate at the speed of sound. Much, much slower. It's all, but it's massively parallel. That's what's one of the things that's different about the human brain. It does many, many, many things at once. So if it's a single calculation, a computer's going to beat us every time. But if it's anything that requires nuance, context, understanding, a computer is going to really be challenged. And it turns out language translation, dictation, and handwriting recognition are some of the toughest things to do. Face recognition is tough, too. A baby, you know, at the age of two can recognize its mother. Age of 3 months can recognize its mother. Computer has a hard time doing that, right? Because of it's the nature of calculations that the computer can do. So we're getting better. And I had a debate, in fact, with a guy named Byron Reese, who's a wonderful guy. I really enjoyed meeting him. He works for Demand Media, but he is a futurist. His website, Byron Reese, BYRONREESE.com, is called A History of the Future. And he talks about how the future has been talked about in the past and the future. It's kind of hard to explain, but it's a timeline. You can go back in time and read what people say. And, you know, it's true that for years people were sure that computers... Well, think about 2001, A Space Odyssey. HAL 9000, the computer, could completely understand what the astronauts were saying, could emote, could think, could respond, so much so that it even kind of went crazy, right? It had a little emotional problem like a human. Well, we're not even... That was supposed to happen in 2001. Here we are, 2012. Not even close. Not even close. So translations are much more difficult. There is nothing, no machine translation that will come even close to what you would do as a human. But since you speak the language, maybe you could use this as a quick way. You know, I mean, I have used... and love to use things like Google Translate. They have an application for the iPhone and the Android phone that makes it, you know, pretty easy to communicate. But the holy grail, the automatic translator, we're quite a ways off from. The thing that you put in your ear, the babble fish that Douglas Adams was talking about, that you put in your ear, that translates. DARPA has this thing, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Administration. Those are the folks who invented the Internet. They're working on something called BOLT, B-O-L-T, the Broad Operational Language Technology Program. They want to make a translator. They want to create a technology capable of translating multiple foreign languages in all genres, retrieving information from the translated material, and enabling, and this is what you want, Marcos, bilingual communication via speech or text. They're going to do 5 dialects of Arabic, Mandarin, Chinese in phase one. Of course, they're going to work on where we've got the trouble spots, where soldiers may need to understand language. But if you look at what they're planning, this is a ways off. It's going to be a while before it can translate email, then messaging, then conversations. It's quite a ways off. We're maybe talking 2020. And every time I've seen an estimate or a guess like this, it's also way off. We think computers are going to be better at this than they are. And they're just not. Siri, you might have used something that's related to this. Siri is based on defense research, actually. That's the thing that understands your speech in the iPhone. Have you used it? Have you dictated to Siri? Okay, you know what I'm talking about then. It's not quite there yet. Someday we will. I think, you know, maybe if we're lucky, even in our lifetime. Certainly if you're and I say that as a 55-year-old. If you're a 20-year-old, it probably will be in your lifetime. Marcos, I don't know if it'll be soon enough for you to translate your book, though. We got a ways to go. I'd start with Google Translate, but it's only going to be a starting point, and it makes a lot of mistakes. Sometimes hysterical. Coming up, Rudy in San Marino. His screen will not light up. He can see it, but it's very faint. I know what's wrong, and I will help you. I shall help you, Rudy, as soon as I help everybody who's been bit by a virus, a bug, by malware, by beasties of any kind. Rudy in San Marino, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Welcome to the show, Rudy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call. I have a Sony laptop Vaio, and it was working perfectly, with the exception that the little fan component there was working like double time for the last month or so.
Uh-oh.
And this morning my screen didn't light up.
Yeah. But you said you could see it faintly.
Very faintly. I don't know whether it's etched into the screen or not, but it's...
No.
I can.
You know what it is your backlit has failed. Your backlit light is necessary to see the screen. Without it, you can still see the screen, but only in direct light. That's something you're going to have to bring in to get fixed, I'm sorry to say. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And it's time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, all the digital jazz. 888-ASK-LEO is the number, 888-827-5536. Toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. Outside the U.S., you can call toll-free. Just use Skype. Skype out to a toll-free number is toll-free. Coming up at 33 after the hour, Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, digital photography expert, Chris Marquardt. He'll talk about digital cameras, digital photography, and so forth. But let's get on to the phone calls. Lots of them. And by the way, the answers and things we talk about on the show are all on our website, techguylabs.com. This is episode 868. Chris and San Dimas, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for hanging on.
I'm having trouble with my iPhone. I'm trying to upload the operating system because a lot of my apps stopped working. And so I went to sync my phone and do the download for the 5.0, I think the operating system is right now, they're putting on. And my sync went all night. It finally stopped, and I got a thing, and it said, if you still want to download, if you download now, you're going to wipe out everything on your phone.
Right.
And I stopped. I'm like, I don't know what to do.
What kind of iPhone do you have?
I have a 3G still. So it's about 2 years old. I'm about ready to go just get a new phone, but I don't have a good backup. And I'm wondering, too, could my computer...
Wait a minute. You said you have a 3G, not GS?
Yes. GS, sorry. 3GS.
Oh, okay, because, yeah, you can't upgrade the 3G.
3GS.
3GS is the oldest one you could still put iOS 5 on. So the way it works is when you put a new operating system on one that old, it's going to start over, which you kind of want to do because it's not working right anyway.
Well, and all my apps are stopping working now.
But what it will do after it restores the operating system, kind of what it does is wipes out the hard drive, restores the operating system, gets it back to a clean factory state, is that it'll say, hey, I see you have a backup here on iTunes. Would you like me to restore that? And it'll restore everything.
But since I can't get a good backup because my backup is stalling...
Well, you've had a good backup at some point.
Well, that's true. I would go back to there. So any contacts I had on there would be in that old backup.
Well, it depends how old, but yes.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, so it'll go back to whatever the last completed backup was. The other thing you can do is, there's backup, which restores settings, data, so forth. You can also just sync it. And you've got all your apps installed on iTunes, right?
Right.
And you've got all your music on iTunes.
Yes.
Do you have any stuff that you purchased on your iPhone only? Probably not. When you connect your iPhone, it'll say, do you want to transfer these purchases, and transfers them over to the computer.
That's right.
So if you don't have a recent backup, and by the way, you can see the date of the backup before you restore it. If you feel like, gosh, that's way too old, I don't want to restore that one.
It gives you an option.
Right.
Right?
Right. It'll say, here's the backups I have. Which one do you want? And it'll tell you the dates.
Oh, great. Okay.
And if you say, that's like, I don't want to restore that. That's too old. You can just sync up and you'll put all the apps back on and everything, because everything's in your iTunes. What you'll lose is calendar entries, unless you've been syncing with your, you've been using your iCalendar address book anyway.
Okay.
So it's what I'm trying to explain is there's two things going on. There's a backup, which just takes the whole thing and saves it. But there's syncing, which just, you know, if you've got all your address book contents on your Mac and you've got your calendar on, you're on a Mac, right?
I'm not.
Ah, you're on a Windows machine.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you been syncing? I don't, you know, to be honest, I've never used an iPhone with Windows. Does it sync up contacts and calendar?
Yes, it syncs up everything, and see, that's what I'm talking about. When I'm saying I backed it up, I'm syncing it, but it won't. It took over 12 hours the other day. It never stopped.
Yeah, syncing is different than backup.
Okay.
Syncing is just, you know, kind of synchronizing what's on your computer and on your phone. Backup is actually a blob that is everything that is on the phone. You ideally, you do restore the backup. Now, sometimes backup can take a long time, and that might just be because it's backing up some large log files that it then sends to Apple. So it is possible to stop it from doing that. You go into iTunes, you select the properties on your iPhone, and I think you alt-click the properties, and you can say, don't tell Apple, I don't want to send diagnostic information back to Apple. Sometimes that's very big.
Okay.
Now, this is the last time you're going to have to do this, because once you go to iOS 5, you use iCloud, and it just kind of syncs automatically. It's always backed up.
That'll be great. If I went to go get a new phone, because I need one, probably, do you sync it up again so all your stuff carries over?
Yeah, you can actually restore the backup to the new phone.
Okay.
So again, there's a difference between backup and sync. It always backs up the first time you sync every day. And then thereafter it syncs, which merely means, you know, it's for some people, that's all you care about. The backup, you know, unless you have a lot of data, like saved games and stuff. If all you want is your address book, your calendar, your songs, your apps, all of that will be restored as syncing.
Okay, that's good to know. I didn't know all that.
Login passwords, things like that, you know, you'll lose. But so what? You can remember those.
Okay. How about having multiple phones on the same iTunes? Is that possible?
Absolutely.
Okay, you just plug in the phone and it recognizes it's a different phone?
Yep. You can have as many iPods, phones, everything, yeah.
And share the music on there, too.
You sure can.
Okay.
There's a limit to the number. I think you can only do it on 5 different phones, but that's probably more than you would need.
Exactly, it is. Okay, Leo, that's very good.
I think you're going to be all right. I think unless there was some horrendous thing that happened, you're probably going to be all right. Check and see what the last backup was, and if that's good enough, I would restore that.
Yeah, very good. All right, thank you.
You're welcome. This will also solve that problem. Slow backups were a problem for a long time. 12 hours is really slow, but I've had that happen where it just goes all night backing up. And I think that was a problem that came from extra ginormous log files that were saved on the phone as diagnostic information. So you can fix that, I found out. And it certainly did seem to fix the problem. By going, if you need iTunes to do this on the Mac or the PC, plugging your phone in, and then alt-clicking right-clicking on either the Mac or the PC will work. Right-clicking or command-click, and then you'll see on that pop-up menu on your phone, reset warnings. And you want to do that. Then the next time you plug in the phone, it'll say, hey, would you like to send diagnostic information to Apple? Help us be better? Say no. You know, generally I say, yes, I'm a nice guy. I want to help out. But Apple had a bug where they were sending a lot of data back. Way too much data back. And it would actually take forever to do the backup because it had to copy all that data over. So say no. Say no. You don't need to help Apple. They can help themselves. In our chat room, somebody's saying, and I think absolutely great advice, make sure you do have the latest iTunes. Kaneko in the chat room says that. Update your iTunes if you haven't done that. You want to have the latest version. I'm sure you do since it's offering you iOS 5. It means you have been keeping up to date. Gabriel in Yorba Linda, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Gabriel.
Hey, Leo. Love the show. Been listening for a long time. My question is, I love my satellite radio, and I know you're on XM, but I have Sirius.
Yes.
What's the problem between the two? I'm very frustrated.
They merged, right? They're one company. How could that be different?
I've been with them for, I think, 10 years now, and I don't mind paying. I love the service, but do you know what the, can you request your show to be put on?
No, I'll explain. I'll explain why. I have an understanding of this that may be inaccurate, but I'll explain why the tech guy is not on Sirius when we come back. Leo LaFleur. Everybody, cha-cha. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. Kyle Benham is our musical director, and you can find a list of all the songs Kyle chooses, all the wacky tunes Kyle's picking up for our show at his Google Plus page, Kyle space B-E-N-H-A-M, or on our page at the end of the show. We'll put it up there, and that is TechGuyLabs.com. So Gabriel and Yorba Linda has an interesting question. I have to be politic. Actually, I don't have to be politic. I'm going to... this show is syndicated by Clear Channel's Premier Radio Networks. And Clear Channel, which is the biggest radio company in the United States, was an early investor in XM. In fact, before the satellites went up, before rock and roll or whatever they were... No, I guess rock and roll was Sirius. Before the satellites went up, Clear Channel had invested in XM. And as part of their deal, they got some special stations on XM. One of the stations is the one I'm on, America's Talk, 166. It's one of the few stations, as you probably know, that have ads on them. Those are all owned by Clear Channel, programmed by Clear Channel. Now, unfortunately, XM doesn't like having these stations on. They don't like the ads. They wanted to control them. They actually went to court, and the judge said, no, you made the deal. You got to live with it. And I thought maybe when the merger between XM and Sirius happened, that might have let them off the hook. Apparently, it has not. So thank goodness we are still on XM. But Sirius does not have the same deal with Clear Channel, and as a result, we are not one of XM's 166, America's Talk, is not on Sirius. Does that make sense, Gabriel?
It makes sense, but it's very frustrating for the consumer because you call them up, because I got a new Ford, it comes with Sirius, and I've been paying the premium because I got the iPod app for my other car. I was paying for the XM and Sirius package. And now you can't have, if you have a Sirius account or an XM account, you can't get the discount because they claim to be two different companies.
Yeah, it's weird because they aren't. They're one company.
They're one company, and the content...
Is Howard Stern on XM? I don't think he is. He's only on Sirius,
yeah,
right?
Yes, you can. You can get Howard on XM.
Oh, you can. All right. They've now done the crossover. It's in their interest, so they're going to do it. But in this case, I gather, and I may be wrong on this. This is just, this is hearsay. This is radio scuttlebutt. So I may be wrong on this, but it's, I suspect, has something to do with just, not wanting the Clear Channel stuff on Sirius. But if everybody called and say I wanted it, maybe they'd get it. Now, of course, remember, here's the good news. Clear Channel has an app. It's on Android. It's on iPhone. I think it's on Windows Phone. It's certainly on the internet called iHeartRadio. I'm on iHeartRadio everywhere. And you've got a Ford. Hey, good news. The iHeartRadio app works with Ford Sync, Gabriel. So all you have to do is, get your smartphone, bond it with Ford Sync either via USB or Bluetooth, and now and then get the free iHeartRadio app, and you're good to go. You can listen to everything. So that's the workaround, I guess. Naomi is in Denver. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. Hi, Naomi.
Hi, Leo. I met a weirdo in Denver with the bunker basement, a.k.a. the Faraday
cage. And you're in our chat room, too, so it's nice to see you.
Anyway, I got the Netgear Universal Dual Range Extender that everybody recommended on the chat room. And now I'm trying to get the D-Link, my old D-Link 1310 router, to make a network. And now the D-Link is just gone berserk. It won't recognize anything.
What was the Wi-Fi extender? Which one did you get? I'm sorry, I missed that.
I got the Netgear.
Yeah, that's why. It's generally better. So the way we extend Wi-Fi is using a standard called WDS, Wireless Distribution System, WDS. But unfortunately, it's a sloppy standard. It wasn't highly refined. And so, as a result, different vendors kind of do it differently. And that means, generally speaking, you want to use the same Wi-Fi extender as the access point you're using. So since you've got a D-Link, I would get D-Link's Wi-Fi extender, not Netgear's. Now, you may still be able to get it to work. So what you but the problem is you have to get the Netgear to see the D-Link to extend it. It should be in the settings of the Netgear.
So I shouldn't worry about trying to get it to go to the DSL modem because I got the DSL modem PK500Z Zycel.
Yeah, the Zycel is connected to the this sounds like that old song. The Zycel connected to the Netgear. The Netgear connected to the D-Link. The D-Link connected to the Zycel. And it's all a big old mess. So what you want to do is figure out only one of those three devices should be doing what's called DHCP. The other two should be bridging. They shouldn't be doing any configuration at all. They should just be passing along the signal.
Okay, so then the D-Link or the DSL should be doing the DHCP?
Well, it doesn't matter who does, but I would say, yeah, the first thing on the chain, if it does a good job, let it do it. And
so
then,
I do like a bridge. How do I make
Yeah, so then you go into, so now, so the Zycel doesn't have wireless, I take it. That's why you got the D-Link.
Well, it's wireless. It's just that the range extender can't see because I've got the Faraday cage, the bunker basement.
How come you? So, what did you get the D-Link for?
Well, the D-Link was what I had before. Oh,
so
I
you have a Zycel and a D-Link.
Huh?
You have a Zycel and a D-Link. Oh, I get it. The D-Link is at the other end. Where's the D-Link?
No, I have all three.
Yeah, and let's step back a moment. So the Zycel is the DSL modem.
Correct.
It's connected to the D-Link. Why?
I don't know.
D-Link's not doing anything, right? Because the Zycel is wireless.
Correct.
Take the D-Link out.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I don't know what it's doing there.
I was trying to get it into the kids' room so that they could have one, too, but so they could have a little bit better reception because this is a weird house. It was built as an experiment,
right.
And then my husband and I both are into construction, and we had to take the house over because they ran over budget, and then we had to take it over and finish it. So it's like, It was a very strange house.
It sounds like it's haunted at this point. I don't know what's going on in there. So I understand you put the D-Link in, but the D-Link doesn't sound like it's doing anything really. You put that in there so that it would boost the Zycel signal, I guess, but that's what you need to do is have the Zycel do its thing. And you say, oh, but I can't receive it somewhere. Now, you now want to put a WDS booster. Could be the D-Link, could be the Netgear. I don't care what brand. It better be. Would be better if it were a Zycel. In between, extending the range. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Very confusing. SL Extreme. I feel so sorry for our last caller because it's just a mess. It's just a confused, bollocksed up mess. And my suggestion, there's a great website that probably will help better than I can. There's not enough time in this radio show to help you. She is in the chat room. I might try to help her in the chat room a little bit. But there's a great website called Practically Networked. Is that it? Practically? No, I got it wrong. PracticallyNetworked.com, I thought, but maybe not. PracticallyNetworked.com. Yeah, that's it. And it was designed to help people set up home networks. You know, it's funny because home networks, everybody does them now. But really, this was the province of the IT department, the super, super geeks at the IT department until fairly recently. So we're being asked to do stuff that super nerds even have a hard time figuring out. So there's a whole troubleshooting and tutorials section on networking. And they'll talk about all of the stuff that you need to figure out. It's really a great, great resource for anybody who has trouble with home networking. You can also do a search for WDS. That's what you're going to be doing, the wireless distribution system. And there's documents there and in other places on how to use WDS to extend a Wi-Fi network, which is what she essentially wants to do. I would like to give you more help, but I just don't have time. I don't have time. You know why? Because Chris Marquardt is here, ladies and gentlemen. He is the photo guy on the show. I'm the tech guy. He's the photo guy, digital photographer. Worked for HP for a long time, so he's also a geek in good standing. And he joins us almost every week. He was on a cruise last week, but he joins us almost every week to talk about digital photography. You went on the Mac Mania cruise.
Spent time on the cruise ship with geeks down the Rhine River in Germany.
Oh, what fun. So,
it was fun.
It's actually, busman's holiday. This is your neck of the woods. You must have been the guide.
Yeah, right in my backyard. No, I wasn't the guide, but I taught photography on the cruise and was a great experience. Met some really awesome people, including a particle physicist who could explain me why cosmic radiation kills my sensor, but it's not as bad as you think, and I don't really want to talk about that today.
But I do want to just quickly mention that I'm going on the next one. You should talk to Neil and get on the next one. I would love it if you could go on this.
Well, Neil has still to make that decision. I think that he's still waiting for the feedback. This was my first cruise,
but how did Chris do? Everybody say give him good feedback. We're all going to Australia in November. It's the Mac Mania 15, Australian Eclipse 2012. And you want to go on this because not only is it a crazy Mac Mania two-week cruise to the Great Barrier Reef in Australia and everything, I'm going to be on it lecturing, but it's also a solar eclipse.
And I would appreciate that even being able to spending more time with you there.
Yeah, I would be fun to hang out. I've not really had much chance to hang out with you, Chris. So talk Captain Neil into that, and maybe we'll see you on Mac Mania 15. If you want to know more about it, geekcruises.com is the website. So I bet you took some good pictures, though.
Well, I did, but what I wanted to talk to this weekend is next weekend, April the 29th, is Worldwide Pinhole Day.
And well, thank goodness we didn't miss that this year.
Well, you'd be surprised the amount of people who really look into that. And it's not necessarily analog. It's not necessarily film photography, even though film is kind of ideal to do that. But, you know, a regular camera has a lens, and that lens has pieces of glass, obviously, and an aperture. And right. That aperture, the smaller you make that, the sharper the image gets. Well, to a certain point, at least. Now, a pinhole camera is pretty much the same thing, but without the lens, just the aperture, right? So very, very small aperture actually produces a picture on your sensor, on the camera.
You know, there's
sensor.
A tie-in here because when I've seen solar eclipses before, when you're looking at solar eclipses, one of the ways you do it is you get a shoebox, you make a pinhole in one end, and you hold it up, point it at the sun, the pinhole at the sun, and look into the back of the box, and you can see the eclipse because you've exactly. turned the shoebox into a pinhole camera.
So the other fun thing, and if you go to tfttf.com/pinhole1, you'll see a typical pinhole picture. The interesting thing about pinholes is that they pretty much have infinite depth of field. So where you would typically have, let's say, a person in focus and the background out of focus and the foreground out of focus, a pinhole picture pretty much gets away with that. If you can see this picture in the foreground,
it's
there
perfect.
Are blades of grass.
Everything's
close
perfect.
To the camera back there. Yeah. But it's not perfect because pinhole has this softish kind of look, and that depends kind of on the size of that hole. But there is... Pinholes make really, really beautiful pictures. Also with color photography.
You'd be hard pressed to get this photo on a digital camera because the blades of grass, which are right next to the lens, are in focus, and so is the tree in the great distance.
The interesting thing is you can get these kind of photos on digital cameras.
You can.
Because pinhole is not limited to film. Pinhole works on digital as well. So what you can get are actual pinhole, well, in quotes, lenses. You can buy those. They are pretty much lens, camera caps, the things you close the hole in the camera with if you don't have a lens on.
Oh.
And you can even make your own. You just use a camera cap, you drill a hole in the middle, and you put a piece of aluminum foil over it that you put a pinhole in.
That's
if you blacken
so cool.
that with a black marker, you will have pretty much a pinhole camera, so you can take these kind of pictures with your digital camera.
If you go to pinholeday.org, they have workshops, they have instructions.
It's a list of events and things. If you click on gallery, I think you have to do a couple of clicks, unfortunately. Now click on that exhibition link.
And you can see these are pinhole exhibit photos. From
right, on the left, click on the go
I'll
button.
I'll just look at all of them here. Yeah, because you can narrow it down. Wow, that's kind of fun. Pinhole photography. Don't expect perfect images, but they're interesting looking, aren't they?
They are interesting. They're different. Another project I just did a while ago, tfttf.com/mini-pinhole, which is a DIY pinhole camera made out of a matchbox and two rolls of film. So you can really play with that. That was a Sunday afternoon project. Worked just like a charm. And
how big should the pinhole be? I mean,
depends on the camera. Some of them are really, really small. We're talking an aperture of f/200 with some of those.
Wow.
Which our regular cameras go to f/32 or maybe 64, but f/200 is very, very small. But getting such a camera, and then you can shoot on film or on digital. And if you do it film, just drop it off at your drugstore, get a 1-hour photo thing done, and is a really awesome DIY project.
I notice a lot of these are black and white. They can take color though, right?
Oh, they can take color, and there is this one special pinhole project I saw a while ago. Someone took film canisters, little black film canisters, put photo paper in them. A pinhole on the other side, closed them and stuck them to scaffoldings and things.
Wow.
And picked them up half a year later. So that was a 6 months pinhole exposure, which then had the traces of the sun on it.
Wow. Really, that's kind of cool. Stuff. That's really cool.
I've seen pinhole cameras made from cans, from beer cans. I've seen them even made from big garbage cans. So you'd roll them up to a corner, open the pinhole, expose the photo paper that's inside, close it again, and you'd have a huge, big, beautiful pinhole photo.
I want to make one. This sounds like fun. So, International Pinhole Day is, yes. When is it? April 29th?
April the 29th.
29th. Is it the same day every year, or do they just make up when it is?
No, I think it's the 29th every year.
April 29th every year.
Sunday, next Sunday. Pretty much next Sunday. So.
Well, I won't be here next Sunday. Scott Wilkinson will. You could talk to him next Sunday, though. He'll be talking to you.
And, I'd love to.
Yeah, he's our home theater guy. I'm going to Norway for the Nordic Light Festival, a big photographic festival. You should come up and visit. That's close to Germany, right? ChrisMarquardt.com. Oh, thank you, Chris. You work fast. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you, Chris Marquardt. ChrisMarquardt.com is his website. He does a great podcast called Tips from the Top Floor. You'll find that there. And does photography workshops all over the world. In fact, he's coming to the U.S., I think, this summer. ChrisMarquardt.com. We have a link in the website, TechGuyLabs.com. Tim, Norwalk, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Tim. Oh, wait a minute. Let me push the button. There we go. Hi, Tim.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a problem, an issue with my Android phone with the SD card.
Okay.
I have an SD card directory that's just SD card, and then I have an SD card directory with a -ext.
Right.
And then I have an MMT SD card.
Right.
And then a blank, regular SD card. I'm getting all confused.
This is why, by the way, on Windows Phone, they don't let you do an SD card. this is normal. It's an Android. So many Android phones. What phone do you have?
It's a Droid X2.
So many Android phones, including the Droid, have their internal memory, and they have a built-in, what they call an SD card, which is built-in storage. And then when you put an SD card in it, then it's EXT. That's the external SD card as opposed to the internal SD card, which you don't even know about because you didn't put one in there, but it's an imaginary SD card. So you really only have two.
Whatever files are in the SD card, I don't have to worry about. It's just the EXT because those are the ones that are on the actual card that
right.
comes out.
Yeah, when you pop that card out and put stuff on there, it shows up on the external one.
Okay.
And MNT is just a Linux. is where the card kind of lives in the Linux file system. But that's the same as the one. They don't want you to browse around. You had to get a third-party application to see that stuff. You're not supposed to see that. It's supposed to be hidden. So you're not, I know what you've been doing. You've been walking around in the tree structure and you're seeing stuff. When you mount a disk in Linux, it mounts into a directory called MNT. It's a virtual directory. Don't even worry about it.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Just ignore it. Don't look there. Don't look there. No, there's nothing there. There's nothing to see. Don't look.
Don't look in the MNT.
Don't look in there. No.
Okay, just the SD card.
Yeah. You're using a file browser to look at this stuff?
Yeah, I copied it over to some directories on my computer, and I was trying to make heads or tails of it because some files, and it seems like every time I open Gallery, it duplicates all these thumbnails, and I end up with 623 thumbnails when I only had 48 to begin with.
It's kind of encouraged that you not start messing around with the directories because you can do some damage. If you know what you're doing, it's okay, but you got to be careful.
Not rooted. And the phone is not rooted.
Right. So you probably couldn't modify anything too critical, but you could delete files by accident. The stuff in / MNT is the same thing that you're seeing. It's just where it sticks it. But you'll also see, you know, you might look in your media directory, for instance, and see stuff there from the external card because those are aliases that the Linux file system makes.
The media portion, is that where the DCIM...
That's where the camera pictures go. That's right.
Oh, okay. And does Turning Off the Phone unmount the SD card?
Yes, it does.
Oh, okay. Great. How do I go from my current 4 gigabyte card to an 8 gigabyte card without losing any of those files?
Connect your phone up via the USB cable. You'll go into the settings and you'll say turn on USB disk mode, and magically on your desktop you'll see that folder in your on Windows. It'll be in my computer. On the Mac, it'll just mount on the desktop. You'll see the phone as a hard drive. What you're seeing is the SD card. Copy everything that's on that SD card. Then you could take it out, put in a larger one, and copy the stuff back onto the larger one. Everything should work just fine. It is a little confusing, and it's, in fact, Apple doesn't let you see the file system at all. Windows Phone, they don't even allow SD cards. They do, but they don't support them. It's because Android is a geek operating system at root. It's Linux. And so even if you haven't rooted it, you get to see stuff you're not supposed to see. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. I'm not the kind of person that says stay in ignorance. I like that approach. I don't think you should be ignorant about what's going on in your computer at all. But it can confuse. The trick is not to just kind of wade in there, to do exactly what you did. Call somebody, ask them. Somebody knows what they're talking about, ask them. Unfortunately, there's a large number of people who don't know what they're talking about, who don't know that they don't know what they're talking about, who will tell you crazy stuff. So, go to an authoritative source and ask them and learn. I like it. I like the fact that you can do this and you can see it and you can modify it. That's how you learn. Just understand there's a little teeny weeny teeny teeny tiny bit of risk in there. Maybe larger than that. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to talk to... let's see who's been waiting the longest. Ed in Santa Cruz, you're next. Ed in Santa Cruz, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Ed.
Hi, Leo. It's a pleasure to be on your program.
Oh, you're mad at Google, huh?
I told Gina I hate Google today.
What did they do?
Well, I had totally rebuilt my computer, reinstalled Windows, reinstalled all my software and everything. And when I got all done, it was all perfect for a couple weeks. And I noticed that Google Earth was gone. So, okay, I go back to reinstall it, and I think I missed the little teensy checkbox that says install Google Chrome.
Ah.
And when I got done, a lot of other little problems, but Internet Explorer just wouldn't work anymore, and Flash wouldn't work anymore, even though I had the latest version. So even right before your program today, I uploaded Flash again, all the latest stuff, and I sort of did the workaround in Internet Explorer and got add-ons turn back on, but they just turn off again, And every single time I bring up YouTube, it says your Flash player's out of date. You've got to have the latest Flash player or an HTML5 browser. Basically, in a way, my comment's more political than it is how to fix this, because I know how to fix it. But why should these guys be able to sabotage each other? Google and Internet Explorer are at war with each other. And there's nothing regulates that. There ought to be a law. It's a classic case. Yeah, this is really evil of Google to do stuff like this.
I'm not sure it's Google, to be honest. I'm not sure what happened. Let me ask the chat room. Have you had this happen when you installed Google Earth on Windows? I've never had this happen. Something else happened, Ed. I don't know what exactly, but this is not normal.
I know it's not normal.
So I agree with you. If this were to be, you know, SOP for Google, oh, install Google Earth and we'll break in and explore, that would be wrong. But that's not what happened. I've done exactly what you said, not had a problem, and I'm looking at the chat room. All of them say, no, this is, you know, I have four browsers, says one guy. They should be compatible. There is something else going on, and it is not Chrome. It is not Google Earth. There is something not right with your system. Internet Explorer itself is messed up. You know what you might want to do? Run Windows Update and install Windows, the latest Internet Explorer 9. See if that fixes things. Something else is wrong. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And it's time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, and all that digital jazz at 888-ASK-LEO. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. I won't be here next week, but there's good news afoot. Our home theater expert, Scott Wilkinson, will be filling in for me. That's great, because if you've got a home theater question, Scott's the greatest. Whether it's screens, audio, whatever, Scott Wilkinson will be here next week to take your calls. 8888-ASK-LEO. Poor Phyllis. Hi, Phyllis. Phyllis in Spring Hill, Florida. Something went wrong.
Oh, well, I'm 78 years old, and I have no business having a computer. Because
that's not true, Phyllis.
When you get done talking to me, you're going to be like my daughter. Why in the world did anybody sell you a computer? Because you don't know anything.
Well, that's normal, but how are you going to learn anything if you don't do it?
Oh, well, I don't know, because she's been trying to help me and to teach me, and I said, my gosh. She gets me straightened around, and then the next thing you know, I do something stupid, and I have to call her again. But I listen to you every week.
Aren't you great? What I did? My mom's 79. She's older than you. And I've given her an iMac. I gave her a Windows 2000 machine. I've given her a laptop. But now she has an iPad, and she loves it.
Yes, I heard you say that before. Well, here's my problem. My daughter told me yesterday that in the paper they were talking about just what you were saying about the And she said, I'm going to go on the DEV or whatever that was, because she said, I know how paranoid you are about everything. And she said, I will check and find out, because I've been having trouble with my computer here. And it keeps telling me that I am not, it's not identified and it's not encrypted and it's dangerous and all that stuff. So I've been fighting.
Yeah, that's Microsoft's Windows Security Center. It puts up a little red flag, doesn't it? It says, you know, you're not safe. You're not safe. And it drives you crazy.
Well, what happened is, so while I'm listening to you and I'm cleaning out my closet here, and you were talking about this article.
Right.
And so I thought, oh, you always talk about ESET. And I thought, well, when you were saying about go to antivirus.com,
right.
I thought, okay, I did that. Mm. And so when it come up on the page, you know, that you can choose, I saw ESET. And I thought, oh, you talk about that, so I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to that. Okay, I got on to that, and I went ahead and I put download for the thing, and I pressed the English thing, and the next thing I know, it comes up, and it's got a whole different toolbar thing, and it's I thought it was Japanese, Chinese, or something.
Oh, no!
Well, but while I was waiting for you here, I was messing around here, trying to click around. I went to the uninstall thing, and my programs. And it said that, when it come up, when it says, do you want to uninstall or whatever, yes or no? Well, I can't understand what it's saying because it's in this different language.
Of course. You couldn't tell. How would you know?
I don't know. Well, I tried no, and then I tried yes, and then finally it went off of my program things. But then it has the icon thing up here, you know, on my desktop thing. And so, like I said, while I was waiting, I was clicking around on my Internet Explorer thing, and this whole thing come up, my page come up, and it says, this is Russian. And the whole
Russian.
Russian, yes.
Wow.
And so I thought, what in the world? And I've been trying and trying. I think they have taken over my whole stupid computer.
Wait a minute. The whole computer went Russian?
No, just the two of my sites went Russian, because when I went to my...
this doesn't sound good. I have bad news for you. This doesn't sound good.
I know. It said my toolbar. It had the little thing that came up, and it said my Yahoo toolbar, something, and they had over this, where I couldn't see.
Oh,
and it
dear.
Said something about fixing, fix it back, because it was going to take over the computer.
Dear.
So I put, yes, I want them to fix it back, or I thought that's what it said, because it was covered up. Yeah, and that's when it came up and it said, it's Russian, and it's got all this stuff in Russian. And I thought, oh, crying out loud. So then I went back to Internet Explorer, and I thought, okay, I will put reset, back to yesterday and see if that does anything. No, that doesn't do it either. So...
I think you're in deep trouble, actually. I think you do have malware on your system, Phyllis.
Oh my God!
I can't tell, but it doesn't sound good. You said you went to. Now I'm a little concerned because you said you went to antivirus.com, and they had a link on there to ESET.
No. When I went to antivirus.com and I put that in my search thing, and I come up with this page.
You searched for antivirus. Oh, good, good. Now I'm a little worried though because I'm worried that you didn't download ESET or something went wrong. But you did see ESET there, and it was ESET.com and everything, right?
Yes. And I thought, okay.
And when you got there, did you see it said ESET cybersecurity for the Mac, and then you clicked the Nod 32 for Windows? Did you see all of that?
No, I don't think so.
I'm a little worried that, in fact, my suspicion is at this point that you've already had something on your system. And one of the things that bad guys always do is keep you from going to antivirus sites.
Oh.
And what I think happened is that it's already on your system. And when you went to search for antiviruses, it put a rogue site up there and you installed something else.
Oh, jeepers!
Jeepers, creepers! Do you have a local expert somewhere you can go?
I'm on Bright House Cable. They're the ones that got.
Yeah, I wouldn't go to tech support. I would find a smart kid, find a tech support person somewhere. Maybe they can help you. But Phyllis, what do you do on your computer?
All I do is play games and check email, and the only email people I have is my daughter and my ex-husband. I don't do a lot,
I think an iPad would be so great for you. You would love an iPad, Phyllis.
Really? Well, the only thing is that, I have macular degeneration, and I have a hard time seeing on both eyes.
So you need big text.
Yes, because I thought about those or that, I guess it's the iPad. Or the Nook or whatever those things are. And I thought, okay, I would look into that, but they're not big enough for me to see. So that's where,
I can understand. So on your computer, you have really big, you have the text set really big?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I do. But is there any way then that I can get this icon off here?
I think it's much worse than that. I think the system's pretty kerfluggered. I would love to. I don't know Spring Hill, and I would love to find you somebody who is really good and helpful on this, because I think that at this point it is no longer something you can do anything about. Well, it's not merely safe; it's just not going to get better. I think we need to get some help here.
Thing has taken over my whole computer.
Well, I'm afraid it's just a symptom of something much worse, but I can't tell because, of course, I can't see it. But I am guessing that all of this happened because, in fact, when you searched for antivirus, the virus that's already on your system
sent
you to a bad site. And that's what they do, by the way. That's one of the things that this DNS changer and other, you know, this is why it's unfortunate, because I don't want to scare people with this DNS changer. And I think that's exactly what the FBI has done. It's made it like this is the worst thing ever. And there are so many worse things that can happen on your system. I don't, you know, and I, it's unfortunate because there aren't a lot of great tech support people in the world. I wish there were. There were, you know, like every town had a little store that you could go to where, you know, a smart nerd were sitting there at the desk, somebody from Chuck, and he could just fix it for you. But I don't know. She's in Spring Hill, Florida. Phyllis, does your email still work?
Well, gosh, I don't know. I didn't check.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, poor Phyllis and her Russian computer. I feel for her. In fact, this is the thing that hurts me the most when I do this show. It's her computer is infested by Russians. I don't know why. And really, the truth is I can't help her because I'm not anywhere near a computer. And I blame the computer industry. We have sold people, and I say we because I'm part of this industrial, military-industrial complex we call the computer industry. We have sold people a bill of goods. This stuff is not easy to use. It is for enthusiasts or people with IT departments, especially Windows. You should... And I, you know, Phyllis's daughter had the right intentions. She wants to stay in touch with her mom via email. I don't blame her. I think that's great. But it's way overkill. It's like giving her a Ducati motorcycle when she really just wants a trike. It's way overkill. And there's just no way that this is going to get better for Phyllis. Unless she can find out. Phyllis, our chat room is great. They're a bunch of nerds, but they're great. They found there's a community college in Spring Hill. There's guaranteed to be a kid there who's a complete geek. And I'm sure somebody there might be able to help you. Maybe there's a senior center in your area. Often they have geeks. You might also look for a user group in your area. What you need is a geek. Somebody who can come in there and help you fix this problem. Somebody who can put their hands on the machine. The problem is there are a lot of people, as you will learn, who think they know what's going on and don't. You haven't spent 70 years on this planet without knowing that. And then those people could make it worse. The truth is, this is kind of why I'm a fan of the iPad. For people who don't want to become computer geeks, they don't want to become computer enthusiasts, they just want to do some email, some web surfing, maybe play some games. Very nice choice. I should get my mom on. She loves it. She's thrilled with it. In fact, the only problem is she wants the new one. I gave her an iPad 1. I owe her a new one. If it would make any sense to you, Phyllis, I would say the best thing to do at this point, and probably what a geek would do, is back up your data, reformat the hard drive, and reinstall Windows. A lot easier to say than do. Even though I know you have trouble with your vision, even though you have low vision, the iPad, all the text can be made bigger on all the things. Games, you know, you're not going to have to find a game you can play at a bigger size. This is one of those things, and it really kills me when we do the show, because there's some things that just, I wish there were a solution. I wish there were an easy fix. I could say, you know, oh, no problem. You go to this website, push this button, and the thing will fix itself. It's more complicated, much more than that. And I don't think you should have to become a computer expert or a security expert to use a computer. But unfortunately, you do. And we've sold you that bill of goods that anybody can use this thing. It ain't a toaster. It's certainly the most complex thing you have in your house, easily, by far. Probably the most complex thing you've ever owned. And I don't want you to feel bad because you're obviously an intelligent person, Phyllis. It's not your fault. This thing's just nuts. And it's complicated to fix, and probably, seriously, a true smart geek, what they're going to say is, all right, Phyllis, I'm going to take your data, whatever you want to save off of here, preserve your, when, you know, you should, I hear these toolbars in your browser, that makes me nervous, I'm not crazy about that. It sounded like AOL was your service provider, I hope not, but if that's the case, well, they're going to have to get your settings. They're going to have to save your email settings, maybe save your email too, because AOL doesn't always do that. See, this person needs to know what they're doing. And then they need to erase everything that's on your hard drive because it's infested. It sounds like, I would guess, it's infested, but I can't tell because I'm guessing. But when you start seeing spontaneous Russian text on your screen, that's not usually a good sign. It's pretty hard to make that happen by accident. And then once you format the drive, then you've got to find your Windows disks. You still have those. The disks came with your computer. You got to restore your computer. You got to run Windows Update like crazy. This person should also help you secure yourself, lock you down, give you, you know, explain some things you shouldn't do, get an antivirus on there, and leave you with some instructions and maybe come back every week or so to see how you're doing. You can see why I'm recommending an iPad. Because you don't need any of that. Oh, I feel for you. I really do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I wish I could do better than that. This is a very frustrating call. We get them all the time. And it's very hard to help somebody from this distance. Chris in Moreno Valley, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Chris.
Hi. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks.
I have an old system. I have an old capture card. I want to do video editing, but I'm using Pinnacle 9, and I still have a video camera that uses a tape. And so I've been using it for about 5 years, but suddenly now I turn and look around, and everything's HD, and I kind of want to get an HD camera and a whole new setup.
And of course, HD, it's funny. When we first started editing HD just a few years ago, it was so massive. It was so big. You had to have a, you know, super fast machine, and it was very difficult to do. Now, you know, everybody's doing it.
Right.
But are you willing to get a new machine?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, wow. You're going to start all over.
Yeah, I feel like I kind of have to.
I'll tell you, what kind of things do you want to edit?
A laptop.
Yeah, you want a laptop, and you want to edit short film?
Well, I'm a teacher, so I film my students, I film my family, and I also have a YouTube channel.
Oh, that's great. It's a little pricier, but this is a case where I think a Mac laptop would be great. Even a MacBook Air, which I think they're great, they're very lightweight. It's more than enough power and it comes with iMovie, which is great. And if you want to step up for a couple of $100, you can get Final Cut Pro, which is kind of the state of the art.
Right.
If you're price sensitive, is to get a Windows machine and Adobe Premiere Elements, which is pretty darn good.
Is there any specific? For my YouTube channel, I actually captured Nintendo Entertainment System video, and I know that the quality on that's going to be low anyway. But I'm wanting. So that's part of the problem is having an interface that'll capture both an HD camera for like live shots. And also the footage from
any modern camera will work with an HD camera, with a proper, you know, device. How do you get video out of the Nintendo?
I just plug the regular cables instead of going into a TV.
You have something like an ATI All in Wonder in that computer, so you just plug it in.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. You're and gonna have, if you get a laptop, it's not gonna have anymore. It's not gonna have the composite in. You know, that yellow, red, white plugs that you have on your computer.
Right.
They don't put those on anymore. But you can get a breakout box. A lot of companies make them that will have red, white, and yellow into USB. It'll actually do a better job than what you're doing, probably.
Okay. Do you have any recommendations?
Yeah, hang on. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'll give you a Windows choice and a Mac choice. I'd like to see you spend a little more money and get the Mac, but we'll help you. It's LX Stream. We're going back and forth in the chat room about Phyllis. We're trying to find her a good solution, and I still think the best solution for Phyllis, even with her low vision, is the new iPad. Its Retina display is so good. A couple of people in the chat room work with kids with low vision and say the iPad is fine. It has great accessibility options. Phyllis, you could dictate your emails. The games you'd play would be different, but there'd be no security issues, none at all. And if you do have trouble seeing that little screen, there is one thing you could do with an iPad. If you've got an HD TV, a big screen TV, for $99, you can buy the Apple TV, plug it in, and then you could display the iPad on your big screen TV where it would be gigantic. And you'd have great results. So I still think that's probably the best choice. And you're just going to have to find somebody to take that old PC off your hands. That's what I think. Now, we're trying to buy some stuff for Chris in Moreno Valley, California, who has somewhat different needs. He wants to get into HD video editing, wants to make YouTube videos. The one little bug in the ointment is he's got to capture video from his Nintendo Entertainment System, which has only composite out, that yellow, red, and white cables out.
Right.
It depends how price sensitive you are. I really think a MacBook Air, or if you want more hard drive space, and you might, a MacBook Pro is a great choice for this. The i5 and i7 processors are plenty fast for all kinds of video editing. They've got really good quality video editing software with the iMovie. And if you decide you want to get the Pro stuff, it's only $200. That's the Final Cut Pro. If you do that, then you're going to go to a site, Elgato, ELGATO.com, and they make USB video capture cards that have composite in.
Do they also capture HDMI?
They sure
do. The capture card?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Basically, it's the same hardware that you would find if you get a Windows laptop from Hopog.com. Hopog.
How's that?
Yeah. No one knows. It's the single worst name in the history of naming. It's HAUPPAUGE.com. And
wow.
It says town in Long Island. God only knows why they named it that. You probably could type, I wonder if, just, I'm out of curiosity, let me see if I Google Hop Hog. No, it doesn't work. Too bad, there's a beer called Hop Hog. It's HAUPPAUGE. I don't know how they're still in business, frankly. It's a great company, maybe that's why. In fact, probably it's a testament to the quality of their products that they survive with a name like that.
Right.
Anyway, they do make both, it's actually the same hardware from Hopog or Elgato, just that Hopog makes them for Windows machines with Windows software, and Elgato makes it for Macs with Mac software. But basically, okay. I think they go to the same Taiwanese companies that get,
right.
You know, and get the same hardware. So that's going to be easy, especially because, you know, the Nintendo is not very demanding.
No.
For the video capture, you want to do it live?
It's not necessary.
I would suggest it'd be better recording to the camera and just then pulling the card and putting it on the computer, but you know that you're going to get better results.
I'm going to do that sometimes, but I plan on going to like the Classic Gaming Expo, and I want to film out there. That's why I want to have a laptop so I can kind of do stuff while I'm out.
Well, again, it's better not to bring the laptop. Film on your camera. Use a flash card in your camera, I know Lance, who's sitting across from me, uses these. There's a company called Atomos, ATOMOS, that makes hard drives you can record to from your camera. But I don't know if you should bring your laptop to these gaming events. I think the best thing is, unless you're recording many, many, many hours, is just to record to the camera's memory and bring it back.
Right. And are all the cameras basically the same? I mean,
well, there's lots of variation. There's lots of variation. I like Canon Vixias, V-I-X-I-A. They're very good. But Sony and Panasonic also make great DV. All the video cameras are great. The truth is, it's a dying breed, except for professionals, because almost everybody else is using their still camera to shoot video, or their phone.
Right.
So you don't really, you know, camcorders are kind of dying out, except for the pros. Pros are the last people still using camcorders for the most part. You might look at, I guess you're going to want to shoot interviews and longer form stuff. You probably do want to get it. I'd get a Canon Vixia, V-I-X-I-A. And which model do you have, Lance? What do you use? We have the HG10s here, which we love, but they're a little pricey. They're $1,500. This is an HFS10. It's nice and compact, good quality. Records to a 32-gigabyte SD card, so you get about an hour on an SD card. And then you just pop it out and put it in your computer. If you get a MacBook Pro, it'll have an SD card reader. You don't even need to carry a reader with you.
Okay. Now, just one other thing. As far as getting a MacBook, I've been using a PC for a long time, and I do a lot of PowerPoint in my social studies class.
And then get a Dell laptop, then that's fine. If you're very comfortable with Windows, there's no reason not to. There's a Sony Vegas is excellent. A lot of people love Sony's Vegas editor. I personally like Adobe Premiere Elements.
Okay.
And that's $100. Nice editor. Very, it's iMovie like.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Chris. Good luck with your shooting. Sounds like you're on your way to making a great gaming show. Walter, hunting in West Virginia, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Walter.
Oh, hi, Leo. Great to talk to you again.
Thanks for calling.
I called up Apple and complained about Flash not being on the iPad. And the fellow suggested that I could download another web browser. I didn't realize that. So could you...
Yeah, I don't recommend it, but there's a browser called Skyfire that will kind of let you use Flash. What is it that you have to have Flash for?
Well, like iHeartRadio, when I tried to get into iHeartRadio.
No, that's not going to solve your problem.
Really?
Yeah, just there's an iHeartRadio app. Use that instead.
Oh, okay. But why don't you recommend the Skyfire?
Well, you could try it. It's free. Or no, I'm sorry. It's $3. It's virtually free.
Okay.
It's okay. It doesn't really do Flash because nothing does Flash for real because the iPad doesn't have Flash. So what they do is they re-encode it on their servers into a form that'll play back on the iPad. There's a good reason why iPad doesn't have Flash. It's terrible. And most sites are abandoning, frankly, Flash because of that. Thank you, Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs hated Adobe so much. I think partly it was just he hated Adobe. I don't know if it was. He wrote a very long letter which appeared on the Apple website about why he doesn't support Flash. And the whatever reason, whether it's just personal or for technical reasons, because iOS, the iPhone and the iPad don't support Flash, any website that's any good is basically doing something else now. There's very few sites that require Flash because if you require Flash, you don't run on the 150 million iOS devices or whatever it is. And that's a big portion of the mobile market. So it's great. We're moving to HTML5. YouTube, HTML5. Yeah, you could still use Flash, but it's better not. The other problem with Flash, frankly, is it's a pig. And so by not supporting, if you've ever tried Flash on the Android tablets, which do support Flash, you realize it's a horrible experience. It's slow, the frame rate's terrible, crashes a lot. It's just not designed for a mobile platform. So I think Apple made the right decision. If you have to have Flash, Skyfire kind of, well, you know, makes Flash sites sort of kind of work. I would just say if you go to a site that requires Flash, I'd send them a note saying, hey, you know, no one on an iPhone can see your stuff. No one on an iPad can see your stuff. Don't you care? Welcome to the 21st century. By the way, Flash on desktops is a huge security problem. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Why is he sounding sped up?
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Actually, I know there are people who listen to this show sped up because I talk so slowly, and so they speed it up, and actually it's more intelligible that way. But I sound like a chipmunk.
8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Lance in Springfield, Massachusetts. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Lance.
Hey, Leo. Good to talk to you. I'd like to ask you a question. My sister has a laptop, and it got a virus, and so she bought the Best Buy, had her data transferred over, and she's not going to use it, gave it to me. What my thought is, I've always been intrigued with Ubuntu. I can get online with it. Would it be worthwhile? She has no restore disk. So I was thinking it might be worthwhile downloading Ubuntu and using that.
I think that's a great idea. How recent what is the laptop? What processor?
I don't know, but it did have Vista on it.
Oh, yeah, you're fine then. Ubuntu. Now, one of the great things about Ubuntu is it's free. In fact, you don't even have to download it. They'll send you a disk if you want. It's Linux.
I switched,
Say again?
I checked the website. I didn't see that. I didn't see that they would send you a disk.
Well, maybe they changed that. Let's see here. Ubuntu. They used to offer a free disk server. They must still do. They couldn't stop doing that. Download. Most people probably download it nowadays because it's only, you know, 700 megabytes, and that's pretty quick. You have to pay for the disk at the store. Oh, that's too bad. They changed that. Oh, well, download it. The advantage of Ubuntu is it's free. It's very fast. They are actually doing a good job supporting it. And it's secure, much more secure than Windows would be. In fact, I think it's even more secure than a Mac. So I like the idea. It'll also run on older hardware, which is great, too.
Did you surf the net like you would on, Windows?
Oh, sure. It comes with Firefox, but you can put Chrome on it. No Internet Explorer. I'm sorry. Also, no Microsoft Office, although you could run it in a kind of funky way under something called Wine. But better use the free Office that comes with it, OpenOffice. In general, Windows programs don't run on Linux. That's one of the disadvantages of Linux if you're really, tied into Windows. But that's not a limitation. You've got great email. You've got Firefox. I think it's a great choice.
And you'd still be able to read your, like, Yahoo or Gmail
sure.
email, right?
Sure. Where you'd run into trouble is if you had AOL mail, maybe. Actually, you could even use AOL through the website. So even there, you're all right.
Nice.
Yeah.
Can I ask you one other quick thing?
Sure.
And I don't know if you can actually answer this, but why is it, I've had both AT&T and Verizon. When you cross a state line, they seem to drop you.
What do you mean they drop?
You'll have three bars, then no bars, and then you can count to five, and boom, you'll have three bars.
I don't think that's because you crossed state lines. I think you probably went from one cell to another, and especially if you're in the middle of nowhere, you're in Springfield. As you get farther and farther west in Massachusetts, there's no cell coverage in western Massachusetts, which some people consider a benefit. But I think it's probably because as you get more rural areas, the cell sites are spread farther and farther out. I don't think they're doing it intentionally. I think it's just you're moving between cell sites and it's not doing too well. Hey, I love it. Bob in Arizona, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Bob.
Yeah. Leo, I'm bored. I didn't think I'd ever get...
You made it! Now, don't get tongue-tied, because then the show will end, and I won't be able to answer your question.
Okay, I have had the same exact issue as the earlier caller talking about Google and Internet Explorer not working.
Well, that's not good. So that's
I can't use Flash at all on my IE.
Okay. Okay.
Every time I download it. Every time it says you can't do this unless you download the upgrade or download the thing, I sat here for 15 minutes.
Now, let me ask you a couple of questions, Bob. Hold on. We're going to run out of time. I want to help you here. Do you have any security software on your system?
Yes, I do.
What is it?
Webroot.
Okay. First thing to do is check and make sure Webroot's not blocking. Okay. Webroot
can... It's been successful.
All right. Well, that's the first thing to do. Check. It's not a great program. I would uninstall it and see if things work okay. So that's one possible problem. Go into Internet Explorer in the advanced settings and reset Internet Explorer. See if that helps. Okay. I'm giving you some stuff you can do.
And it's in 9. I mean, I have 9.
That's fine. 9's fine. In the advanced... In fact, 9's what you want. It's the current version. In the advanced settings... Reset. That's the next thing to try. Make sure Webroot's not getting in the way. Reset your browser. Finally, you can get a standalone installer of Flash. This is always the best idea to install Flash. Instead of installing it in the browser, install it standalone like a regular program. And if you go to Adobe, just go to flash.com and download the Flash player. Then close the browser. And run the installer. Okay?
Okay. Okay.
Those are the three things I would test. None of which, by the way, have anything to do with Google or Chrome. Chrome has Flash built in. That's why. You don't have to install it.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. So I'd close all your browsers.
Every time I downloaded it, I could never find it in the directory tree.
Well, this time, download it to the download folder. Right-click on the link and say download as or save as, and make sure you put it into the desktop or somewhere you can find it. And do run it standalone, because you're going to have much better results. Hey, we're out of time, but I thank you. Do you think I have time for one more? All right, I'm going to try to get... Poor Christian. He's been hanging on for so long. All right, Christian, let's see if we can do this quick. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Leo.
What can I do for you?
Oh, I'm going to build a new PC here, and I was wondering what kind of cooling system I should use. Liquid cooling or a regular fan cooling?
Well, fan air-cooled. Remember the old Volkswagens? They didn't have liquid cooling. They had air-cooled engines. Air-cooled's fine. Liquid cooling is for people who really want to run their machines hotter by overclocking, things like that. So unless you're a gamer or you have some compelling reason to overcool your system, I'd say air cooling is just fine. Liquid cooling adds some complexity, adds some issues that probably it's not necessary to add. A well-designed air-cooled system's just fine. Okay, you're not overclocking, are you, Christian?
Oh no, I shouldn't be.
Yeah. Are you going to build it yourself?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. You know, people do water-cooled systems because it's fun. And, you know, it's challenging and it's interesting and you could play with it and you could overclock. And, you know, it's for people who are serious, same kind of people who would chop and channel a car. You know, they're serious people. If you want a water-cooled system, definitely go Corsair. Corsair.com. They make great sealed coolant. And if you want to know, get some advice on building your new computer, PCPER.com. PCPER.com. This is my friend Ryan Shroud's site. And in fact, if you look over at the hardware leaderboard, the HW leaderboard, he recommends parts for top-of-the-line, mid-range, and budget computers. Thanks for the calls. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.